Hello, rap fans. It's Richard Herring here. Thank you for listening to my podcasts, powered by Acast Plus. Do tell your friends if you think they might enjoy them too. And do come and see me on tour in my show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all tour dates, going to lots of places in the UK. Some extra gigs added in London at the Leicester Square Theatre and the Bloomsbury Theatre. The Leicester Square Theatre first gig is very nearly sold out, so do rush along to those shows, London, if you want to come along. Some of the shows selling fantastically well, some of them selling pretty badly. Hello, Swindon. Do you know I'm coming to your town? Please buy some tickets. And I do have to give a trigger warning. I've done the show only a few times and 6 men have passed out. After the bit where I explain what happens to you during an operation for testicular cancer. So, are you man enough to handle my balls? Only come if you are, have lots of balls and are not scared of balls. There is some mild testicle trauma involved in this story of testicular cancer. It's mainly funny, though, and if you don't come, that means you're scared to come, and I'm going to judge you, so... It's like going on a fairground ride, so do come along. It's going to be very exciting to see if you make it through. I'll give you a badge if you make it through unscathed. Anyway, come and see the tour, richardherring.com for all that news. Some great Rahalastapas coming up, I have to tell you, in the next few weeks. The tour was a lot of fun. Thanks very much to everyone who came. Sit back, relax, and enjoy my stupid fucking podcast.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, my lovelies. Welcome to a very special Rahalastapa. This is the one that we were meant to do at the O2. But then the virus came just the lockdown happened. We were going to do it at the O2 offices. And finally, we're doing it remotely. It's me and James Acaster. Lots and lots of special stuff in this. James is brilliant and there's fun and surprises all the way through. Thank you to O2 for paying us for doing it. That's a nice extra from my point of view, and certainly helps us get through this period of no fucking work. Look, if you're enjoying these podcasts, you can become a monthly badger, get your Cool Kids Memento membership card, badges, look at those two beautiful badges. Loads of extras. We're dumping lots of stuff in the extra videos, including backstage interviews, which we've started doing again with the remote ones. I think there's an extra bit of James Acaster, actually. I must remind Chris about that. Chris, remember about the extra bit of James Acaster. And yes, or you can follow us on Twitch and twitch.tv/RK Herring. Follow us. You'll get notifications of when I'm live. I'm going to try all sorts of stuff on there. And also, you can subscribe if you're with Amazon Prime. You know the deal. You can subscribe and give us some money at no cost to yourself. You can go to gofasterstripe.com. You can buy brilliant things like these signed copies of How Not to Grow Up with a lovely cock drawn in them. Can you see the cock? There we go. Look at that. That's beautiful. That's drawn by me. That's a Herring original. That'll be worth millions of pounds one day. You can buy emergency questions books, 3 for £20, if you want to buy all the existing emergency questions books, or £10 each. And you can buy my downloads. You can buy Top Trump cards. Look, it's all crazy. So there's lots of ways to help us out. Most of this money gets ploughed back into making more podcasts and keeping us running during this difficult time. There's more snooker going on Twitch on the evening times. I'm thinking of trying to do some kind of comedy show. You know, because the snooker series and the stone clearing series, it's time for a comedy show on Twitch. We'll see how that goes. Stay tuned and you'll find out. Let's sit back, relax, and enjoy Rahalastapa with James Acaster. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome a man who thought he was playing the O2. It's Richard Herring. Hello. Hello there. Welcome to a very special edition of Richard Herring's Let's Sell Telephones podcast. Though I was hanging out with Ian Oxygen the other day. He's the guy who invented the O2 network. He calls it Rahelastaba, so I don't know if that's going to catch on. We'll see. This is a very special Rahelastaba brought to you by Priority on O2. Been very kind to pay us for doing this, so thank you for that. Priority is exclusively for O2 customers. Let me give you a little bit of information about them, just so they're happy. Priority brings O2 customers a collection of invite-only moments like this. This is one of those moments just for being on O2, from daily treats like getting a weekly coffee on the house. That sounds good. To getting first eyes on fashion collections or getting first dibs on gig tickets. Priority is exclusive to O2 customers and is our way of saying thanks for being on O2. To get Priority, download the app from the relevant app store or text Priority to 2020. You've got to be able to spell Priority to do that, and I'm not going to help you. It's quite a hard word to spell. So this is a very exciting gig for me. We were meant to do it back in March, I think, initially. I was told I was playing the O2. I was very excited. And then it wasn't the big O2. But then I found out it wasn't even the little O2. It was the bar that serves the little O2, which is... was slightly disappointed, but I thought it's still playing the O2. I'm very excited. Then lockdown, well, actually, just everything was being cancelled. So then we had the idea of doing it at the O2 office, which was not as exciting as playing the O2, but still I'd meet some of the staff who worked for O2 would be exciting. And then the day before I was meant to drive into London to meet my guest, the lockdown was brought into force. So it was going from the O2 to now, a couple of months later, into my house and into my guest's house. It's very exciting. So it still counts. I'm still saying I've played the O2 in a way. It's very nice of them to have me. I'll give you not much has been going on because I'm in lockdown. But I've been looking after my kids quite a lot instead of working. It's difficult looking after your own kids. No one warned me that this would happen. It's the worst thing that's happened. What I like about hanging out with kids is they get pleasure from very simple things. My daughter's 5, my son's 2. They get a lot of pleasure from just running around in a circle, just really fast. It can be one of them, it could be both of them. They find that endlessly exciting. I've tried it. It's not so good for me. My daughter used to really love jumping in puddles. Not so much now. My son really loves that. Just gets so much out of it. At what point in your life does it change? What point do you suddenly go, no, I'm not going to run around in circles anymore. That's no good. There must be a day when you're doing it and then the next day you don't want to do it anymore and then it's forgotten and it's gone. It's quite a tragic moment. I hope my children will love running around in a very tight circle for as long as possible. It's a beautiful thing. It's probably the best thing in life. My daughter's also really got into playing Pac-Man, which I'm very excited about because that was a video game I played as a kid and now she's playing it. She calls it Waka Waka, which I think is a better name than Pac-Man. And so I'm very proud. I think it's... for me, it's probably the same as if I'd said to my dad I really liked reading Swallows and Amazons, which was a book, not a porn film. It was a more innocent time back then. He loved Swallows and Amazons. I did not care for it. But it would have made him proud if I had. But she's made me proud by playing Pac-Man. I've also noticed like we don't really like them playing on the iPad too much. We'll like let them watch TV. When I was a kid, they didn't like us watching TV too much and we'd have to go and read a book. It's just kind of nudged along one. It's like now watching TV is sort of more classy than playing the iPad and more educational. Anyway, enough of my childish nonsense. We have a fantastic guest for you today. He's probably best known for being thanked in the credits of Tim Timony, Tim Timony, Tim Tim to you. That's why we're all here today to see him. Will you please welcome the amazing returning James Acaster, ladies and gentlemen. Here he is. Wow, he was under the table all along.
Hello.
Hello, how Richard. Are you doing?
Good, thank you. And I mean, I know you always do a little jokey intro, yeah. But that is a credit that I am genuinely proud of.
What did you do to help Tim Vine out with Tim Timony, Tim Timony, Tim Tim to you?
I came up with the name of the show. That's what I did. We were in Melbourne at the Melbourne Comedy Festival, yeah. And it was me, him and Tim Key went for lunch breakfast in the morning, and he said... Tim Vine was saying, I've really got to come up with this title today. My manager is texting me and saying, they need it in the program, Tim, and I don't know what to call it.
Yeah.
And so me and Key you know, doing joke titles. And I said that one at one point for a laugh. thought he won't do that. And then he did it. And then at the Edinburgh Festival, I arrived there and there's loads of posters of Tim Vine dressed as a chimney sweep. And then I go to see his show and he comes out of a giant chimney. And it was really funny watching it going, Tim's had to get a chimney made because I, for a laugh, told him to call it Tim to you.
That deserves more than a thanks. That's got to be a writing credit, not a thanks.
Yeah,
you've been done out of that. Did he pay you anything for the title?
He gave me a signed poster. I turned up at one of my tour shows and it was in the dressing room framed with a signed Tim to you poster.
That's
said,
not,
thanks for the title.
That's
Tim.
Not bad. You can probably get a bit for that on eBay.
Yeah. In these times with lockdown and with less and less options of how we're going to make money.
Yeah.
That poster could really help me out.
The poster, we've mentioned it before, the genius poster that Tim Vine did was the one he took that massive billboard down in Cowgate saying Tim Vine is not appearing at this year's Edinburgh Festival. It was the best thing that's ever happened to the Edinburgh Fringe.
I think it is because I wasn't there that year. Right. I think it's before I ever went. And everybody knows that story. Everyone's told each other. You know, people who weren't there have told other people who weren't there about this great thing that Tim Vine did. It's amazing.
But it was great because you'd pass that. I'd pass it probably every single day. It made me laugh every single day. And in Edinburgh, when you get depressed at some point, just having one definite. It was the way, you know, it's hard to describe because a lot of it was his face, but it's a great idea anyway. But just to have a definite laugh every single day was a good thing for the Fringe.
The way I understand it is that didn't it slowly reveal itself? So it was at the top of a hill or something. So that as you came up the hill, you would see his face. Then you would see the words Tim Vine.
Yeah.
And then it would be, is not appearing at Edinburgh Fest. So
I guess that could have happened.
That's what someone said to me.
It was at the bottom of a hill, so it might have worked the other in reverse.
Right,
I'm not sure.
Bottom of a hill. It's going to be those things that kind of gradually over time stuff gets added. It's and he had flyers that year. And they were giving flyers out that said he wasn't at the Edinburgh Festival.
You should do it. Well, I've already lost. I mean, I've lost $5,000 from this year's cancelled Edinburgh Festival because I foolishly paid for my accommodation in advance. And the company that letted me the fat don't have any money left. They've spent my money, so I might not get that back. So it's still not the worst Edinburgh I've had, though, even though I've lost £5,000 without even going.
Yeah. Oh, you've had some horrific ones.
It's in the top half of the most successful Edinburghs, I would say.
And
that.
You let people know about it. Let's face it. If there's two things Richard Herring loves to let people know about. how much money he's lost at Edinburgh and how much money he's given to charity. Those are the two.
That's very true. I made notes because we were all ready to go with this back in March, and I made notes about for this interview in March that now no longer makes sense to me. So I want to read one of those out and see if it makes sense to you. All I wrote was Weetabix has no binding agent in it. Does that make any sense to you?
Well, yeah. I mean,
why have I said that about you?
So Weetabix, the Weetabix factory.
Yeah.
Is located next to Kettering in a small town called Burton Latimer. Okay. Now, a lot of the time, Kettering gets credited for Weetabix comes from Kettering. Burton Latimer is essentially right on the side of Kettering. Yeah. It's an extended universe, but it's not Kettering. But we still take a lot of pride in Weetabix, and it is still the serial of Kettering still. Yeah. A lot of people in Kettering work at the Weetabix factory. And yes, you're right. There is no binding agent. I went to the factory once for a tour. I got shown around. And one of the things I was most impressed by and surprised by was the fact that there's no binding agent. It's just compacted so much that it forms the Bix. And that's just the way. And also there's different stages of it where it's more pliable as it goes along until it gets to that solid Bix.
Sure.
But yeah, no.
The ironic thing about that is Weetabix is an amazing binding agent in itself. If you get Weetabix wet and then let it dry, it's almost impossible to get that off whatever you've put. You could use that to glue stuff to the wall.
Yeah. So in a way, it's like someone saying, fun fact, there's no binding agent in glue.
Good. Well, I'm glad I've got to the bottom of why we have
discovered something else about Weetabix recently during lockdown. I discovered this
during lockdown
because I accidentally bought some Tesco own brand Weetabix.
Oh no!
rather than original OG Weetabix.
Yeah.
And a member of my family, let's say, works at the Weetabix factory.
Sure.
And I said to him, I'm really sorry, man. I bought some home brand stuff and didn't buy your proper one.
Yeah.
And he was like, oh, we make that as well. So Weetabix factory makes all the Weetabix, even the own brand stuff that other people go. They make it all, but it is a different recipe. They do a different recipe for the own brand stuff, and it's not as healthy. So the own brand stuff is worse for you.
And a lot. So they make it deliberately not as healthy for you, so just to punish you for paying, getting it cheaper.
Yeah. Have you eaten Weetabix while we're talking about
that? No, I'm not. I'm just enjoying a little pudding I've got here.
What pudding have you got?
It's do you not recognise that, James?
Oh, no.
Do you know what this is? This is actually delicious.
Is that your off-menu dessert?
That is Bella's pudding. I was on off-menu. It is much better today. I made it yesterday. I found Gail Venkner got in touch with me. So many people. I was on off-menu with what has been heralded as the best and worst episode of off-menu ever.
Absolutely.
Divided the world.
Not even a joke. That is the reaction.
For my dessert, I chose a thing called Bella's pudding, which my grandma made, which we'd lost the recipe for. I couldn't really describe it. I discovered it's a hot dessert. I didn't remember that.
Right.
I'm eating it cold at the moment.
Yeah.
If you want to see the whole thing, it's gone a bit. Great. It's got a bit congealed because I made it yesterday. That's what it looks like, right? So it's that.
Brilliant.
It's a sort of caramel based thing on the bottom and the meringue on the top, as I explained.
Excellent.
It's absolutely. Yesterday I ate some and I thought, oh god, this is actually inedible. Today, it's definitely. Right. I wasn't sure it was the same thing. Gail Venkner from. I was hoping just to keep eating that all the way through, and then
you shouldn't have done it while we're talking about Weetabix.
I know that was the problem, but it's all right. That's Gail Venkner sent me this recipe that her grandma made for butterscotch pudding. This is definitely it, 100% it.
This is great.
I thought it was going to be a horrible thing to eat, but. It's full of sugar. I made it myself. I've never made anything like this. I made it for you, James, but I can't. Maybe I'll put some in an envelope and send it to you.
At this stage, I wouldn't not eat it.
I can put it in a little Tupperware, and then I can send some to. Is Ed able to eat things that are basically just made completely of sugar? He just has to eat it at a certain time, right?
He's just got to calculate the insulin, do all that stuff.
Because there's so much sugar in this.
Yeah.
But it's astonishing. It's astonishing. This is absolutely it. So horrible meringue on the top.
Yeah.
I've put a little video up in the members section of my badges, which shows me cooking it.
Yeah.
A lot of sugar. You put sugar. I'll tell you what you do. So if anyone wants to make it at home, you need 4 ounces of dark brown sugar, 2 separated eggs, 2 tablespoons of plain flour, 2 cups of milk, 2 tablespoons of butter, and then caster sugar. You mix the flour and the brown sugar in a saucepan. You add the egg yolks, beaten, and the milk gradually, and you stir it in. You bring to the boil, and then it doesn't look like it's going to go thick, then it goes thick. Then you put it in you add the butter, then you put in a buttered pie dish, like that. That kind of dish. Mm-hmm. I guess it would work in another kind of pie dish. Then you beat the egg whites and make meringue, add the caster sugar, put it in the oven for 15 minutes, 170 degrees, bang. Leave it to the next day because is it. I'm
it's
so
the next
happy.
Day and then it's the memory.
My daughter ate it and thought it was horrible. My son ate it and really liked it. And now I have to say, I was going to tell you it was disgusting. It's like something from the war. Look at it.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, that doesn't look good. Yeah, it's very,
It's good, man.
War brown.
It's really good. So there, thank you for helping me discover that.
Thank you so much for coming on the episode. Literally, the reaction to that episode was so brilliant. And I wouldn't normally tell guests this, but I'm only telling you because I think out of all the guests we've ever had, you're the one who will absolutely love this kind of reaction the most. Because at the start of it, I think I made some joke about, you know, someone's won our guest today has won a competition to be on the episode, something like that. And then you deliberately throughout the episode were choosing things that weren't real, and that were like imaginary and things. And my girlfriend's mum or one of her friends were just like, oh, I really felt for Ed and James this week. They had this guy and he had won a competition or something. And then he just didn't understand the format. And he was like making food up and guessing it. And they were being so patient with him. But he really didn't seem to have a handle on what he was doing. And it was like, he will be so delighted.
I am delighted by that.
Falling for it that much. I loved it. I had a great time.
Well, Ed was very cross. And that was really all I wanted to make happen.
Not enough people make him cross on it. Too many people go for me, knowing that they'll upset me if they choose a cheese board or something. But you've got to remember that you've got at least two courses before that when you can really upset Ed. So, well done.
Thank you. I enjoyed it. Well, it was very good. You can still listen to that if you want. Ed, Off Menu is... I mean, you've been... Like, you went to America with Off Menu, right? Or did you actually go to America or were you doing them...
We did. We went there for 2 weeks earlier in the year to record some episodes with... American comics, and it's a trip that now seems both stupid and unnecessary, given that in lockdown now we're just Zooming each other and doing podcasts over Zoom, so we could have just all the guests from home. We didn't need to go to them, but at the same time, because of lockdown, absolutely delighted that we did it
and
got to go to America this year, and it was awesome. We had so many great meals and stuff, and the episodes are, well, I really love the episodes. But again, you really find out who of our listenership just across the board hates Americans. When you put them out and they're like, no more Americans, I hate them Americans. And they just don't, again, just don't get when like people are being rude to us for a joke. Americans are so rude. Why are they being nice to you?
I'm on an absolute sugar high at the moment. I've had three tiny little bits of that and I'm absolutely off my nuts. I'm going to crash in about 10 minutes. I'm going to crash. I mean, you must be used to this with Ed. It's going to be, I'm going to be depressed. But at the moment, I feel like I've had all the drugs in the world. It's terrible that a bit of sugar can do that to me.
You do look like you're buzzing, actually. You can see it in your eyes.
It's taken me back to... Yesterday when I ate it, it just tasted really wrong. It tasted lemony and it was not caramelly enough. And I thought I didn't boil it long enough or something. But it's taken me right back to my grandma. It's all very
special.
It's very moving.
That's very special being able to be transported.
It's like,
that.
It's like Proust. This is my Madeleine biscuits. It's La Recherche du Temps Perdu. I haven't read any Proust, but I know it because of the Monty Python sketch.
You can rename it Proust's Pudding and your children will call it that. And then they will try and remember it on the podcast and try and remember who this Proust fellow was. I assume that we knew him. He was probably a friend of the family.
And talking of America as well, is it true? I really, really loved that pilot you did of We the Jury that you did in the UK.
Thanks,
but I read that it was in negotiations to go to America at least. Is it happening in America or is it just one of those things that's...
It's been a weird ongoing thing. So, like, over here we made the pilot and it didn't go anywhere. Like, I was very delighted to get to make a pilot, but it didn't go anywhere. And then for years, they've been trying to make a version of it there. Mm. And now it's been greenlit for a pilot there. But then this has happened, Corona's happened. So it's been put on hold. But, last I checked, they were going to film a pilot of it.
Cool.
What's crazy about it is that I obviously wrote the pilot here. And over there, they've just kind of, all they've done is gone, well, we'll keep it a jury. And that's it. And I'm like, you didn't need to pay me for that. Why have you got me in on this? You could have made a jury sitcom and I don't think I would have had any claim to that idea. But so they've gone... Oh, yeah, you're the executive producer. Okay, I own juries, apparently. I own that idea of juries on television.
Yeah, I had that with when I did Talking Cock, which was a stand-up show initially, and then it kind of loads of European countries said, wanted to put it on. And some of them did it fairly, I always saw them in a foreign language, which most of them I don't speak. Some of them seemed fairly like the same as my show. I sent them the slideshow to use if they want. And some of them... absolutely maybe used one joke from the entire show and you kind of go and then they like to sit in the front row and watch one of them, which was really with the director came with me as well from the UK and we couldn't understand what was going on, but they put in loads of just songs where they changed the words to be about penises, which was not in the the original. And one of them was a version of Send in the Clowns, which was all very serious. It was a very serious song and everyone was very serious. And me and my director just got the absolute worst giggles ever at this idea of someone doing this in the middle of this thing, doing a song about sending the clouds, which we couldn't understand why or what it was about. And the woman next to me,
lyrics to that one.
The woman next to me kept on doing, like, looking at me like this, and we were just like absolutely. And then we were on the front row as well, so the guy could see us. And we were, so it's that pain you get from school, you know, when you're not meant to be laughing.
Yeah.
And then it turned out it was a song about date rape. And we were sitting there, which A, was not in the spirit of what Talking Cock was about, which was about celebrating men and looking at the better side of men rather than the worse side of men. But also, we were sitting there laughing at it as the creator of it. Yeah. But you kind of went, why have you paid me to do it? Why have you paid for me to come out and watch a thing that isn't my fucking show and that is awful?
Yeah.
But yeah, that's good. Well, I hope, it was a good, it's a shame they've changed it because it was a good, you should have been in it. You should have been you in it.
Well, everyone told me I should have been. That was my choice, though.
Was it?
Everyone was like, you should be the main character. I was like, but I can't act.
Yeah.
I mean, I love the cast in that. And I wouldn't change anything about it. But I would have loved to have got the chance to do more episodes. I had a lot of ideas for it. And I don't have many ideas for it. So I'm not one of those people who's like, I want to do a sitcom.
Yeah.
You know, and I only did that one because I was like, oh, I know what I want to do. And this is going to be great. And then all the way through, I mean, sure, loads of people have had this of like, everyone around you is going, this is going to be amazing. And then at the last minute, the same people go, we don't want it. And you're like, oh, okay. Well, she told me it was shit for months instead. And I could have expected this.
Right, I'm going to ask you some emergency questions, James.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Some new ones I don't think you've had before. Stop me if you have. You've been on two or three times over the years. Over the last few months, I have watched every episode of How I Met Your Mother. What is the most degrading thing you've done to yourself for no apparent reason? It's a very bad show.
I had to have a meeting once. Actually, it was when they were trying to get We the Jury made in America.
Right.
They sent me around to like meet loads of writers so that I could choose a writing team that I wanted to be involved with it. And one of them was from How I Met Your Mother.
Oh,
and I had to go in the meeting and talk about how impressed I was about How I Met Your Mother. Which I wasn't.
But there's a lot of episodes of it.
Yeah, a lot of episodes. And also, from what I understand, the payoff at the end is absolutely ridiculous.
They mess it up, really, because I was thinking about it because the girl who is the mother is turning up in quite a lot of stuff now. I think she's just done a film with Andy Samberg. She's really good, the girl who's the mother. But they obviously decided right at the beginning that everyone would want the two guys to get together who failed to get together. But the problem, and so the woman, spoiler alert for people who haven't seen How I Met Your Mother yet, but to be honest, it's spoiled already by existing. The mother dies, and then the end of the series is the guy going round to hook up with the girl that he sort of should have always been with but never got together with. But that relationship didn't really ever gel, you know. So they'd obviously decided right at the beginning, that'll be the thing. But actually you thought, I really like this girl.
Oh,
she's
no.
The mother's really good. And then they kill her.
Oh, dear.
And you're not, you go, oh. Because it's sort of disappointing if you actually were in love with someone in your 20s and then you actually hook up with them in their 50s or whatever.
Sure.
You've missed the exciting part of life, the having kids, the whatever, although I think the character couldn't have kids, but whatever. But, you know, you've had all that. And also just the fantastic sex of having sex with someone in their 20s. They had sex as well. So have you done anything as humiliating as that?
Well, you've
done a lot of humiliating things.
I've done a lot of humiliating things. They've all, you know, I kind of wrote a book about them. So, and they were mostly unnecessary as well. Like a lot of time, I often think that just in general, like, I've thought, been thinking about it a lot the last couple of years, especially last year. I was on tour the whole year and I just thought, why have I done this to myself? And put myself in this position where I'm on stage all the time and I feel incredibly uncomfortable. I don't like people looking at me. I don't like all the attention being on stage. I feel stupid. I feel like the show I'm doing is shit. And I think that just since being a kid, I've just relentlessly done that, like, you know, like plays in the living room for parents.
Yeah.
I'd be like, I'm going to devote my whole day to this thing that never works out. I never put the play on and they go, that was amazing. They'll always be like, okay, yeah. Seems all right.
Yeah.
And like, I did one once where it was just me and my friends dancing to Cotton Eye Joe. And putting that on, and us pretending to be rednecks, yeah. The band Rednecks.
I remember, don't really tell me about Rednecks.
Yeah, but not, you know, just for anybody listening who doesn't know. I don't want
surely everyone knows Rednecks.
We were pretending to be Rednecks. You know,
the band like, Rednecks, not yeah. Rednecks, yeah, okay. But the band Rednecks were pretending to be Rednecks, to be fair.
Yeah, to be fair. And what a risk. They were lucky that song was that good. Like, what a catchy song that everyone just forget. That they've called themselves Rednecks, and they are all white. So it's like, it's a real gamble.
Yeah, it was a gamble.
If a band came out now and did that,
yeah,
we would all be absolutely appalled. I wouldn't even listen to the song.
No.
But I was six or whatever.
Yeah, fair enough.
So like, I was like, this is my jam, I love it, don't even understand what the name means. I had more questions about the song title and the lyrics than I did the band name.
Yeah. God, no, Joe. Do you remember Pig yeah. in a Poke, the follow-up single, Pig in a Poke?
It was called Pop in an Oak.
Pop in an Oak, that's it. Pop in
yeah,
an Oak.
I bought that.
Did you, yeah?
I bought that. And I remember like my first time of being, feeling like my music taste was being criticised. I played it in the house and my dad just went, sounds exactly like Cotton Eye Joe. I was like, no, it doesn't, Dad! I was really like defensive about like this guy thinks that I don't have good music taste. It's not sounding exactly like Cotton Eye Joe.
Yeah,
it's just Pop and an Oak. They're saying a different thing.
Do you think it now, with the benefit of all your musical wisdom, do you think it sounds like a different song?
Yeah, they're similar. They're similar songs actually. I think they might even be in the. I think they're in a slightly different key.
Yeah,
the lyrics are different, but everything else seems pretty much the same.
Good luck to Rednecks. I wonder what they're. Maybe I'll get them on the podcast.
What they're all up to, especially the guy who used to sit on the floor and play the drum. He would just be there going, he did it like that with his whole body, but he'd just be keeping the beat constantly.
Yeah.
And I used to love him. I used to think he was absolutely brilliant. He was the only one I was watching. I wasn't watching the lady who was lifting her skirt up and showing her bloomers. I didn't care about that. I cared about him.
Fair enough.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Well, talking of musical tech, you've written, I think we probably talked about quite a lot of the stories in the book in previous podcasts because it was about your year in 2016. It's called Perfect Sound Whatever. You had a pretty disastrous year.
I had a bad 2017 and 17. I bought music that had come out in 2016. Yeah. So it's quite confusing. Yeah. But yeah. So it was me having a bit of a, I mean, I call it a breakdown for shorthand, but it's quite hard to like, because I think when you call it a breakdown, people think it must be something out of the ordinary that doesn't happen to many people or whatever. And actually, it's just like, I think it's just one of those moments where you've ignored loads of stuff for ages and then it all piles up on top of you. And it takes one thing, in this instance, a breakup, to kind of make you suddenly realise how much you've been carrying around and beating yourself up about or whatever. Yeah. And you can't handle it anymore. So like, you know, I I started going to therapy and exercising more and good things like that, but I also obsessively started buying music that came out in 2016.
Sure.
And I'm not going to lie, Richard, it's not like I've stopped.
You've got more albums than there were days in 2016, so that you've got...
Yeah.
Have you got every album that was released in 2016 or just... No.
No, it would take so long to do that. I mean, the amount of music now that gets released every year, so saturated, it's absolutely crazy, which is why I was able to do a project like this, because I'd only buy ones that I liked.
Yeah.
I was like, I can't go insane and just buy everything, and even if I don't like it. So I had to like it, that was the rule. But I still own, you know... I don't know exactly how much it is now, but it's definitely over 650 and probably approaching 700 at this point. And the fact that I can still find ones that I love and that are exciting me during lockdown, the amount that I've discovered that I've gone, I love this album. And I can't believe that it's still another one from that year. I find astounding, but you couldn't do it with, you'd have to be like, you know, 2009, 2010 onwards.
Yeah.
You can do it.
Okay.
For any year.
Because I'm not as into... I mean, you're very into music. I'm not really bothered about music, I have to say. So.
Oh, dear. Oh, no.
You know, I'll listen to it if it's on. I'm listening to a lot of, like, children's film soundtracks, like Moana and Annie and... Yeah.
Moana's film soundtrack. You know what year that came out?
Is it 2016?
Yeah, it is.
Is it? Is that one of your choices?
I bought it.
Yeah. It's good, man. There's some good music in it.
Lin-Manuel Miranda does the music for it.
Yeah.
Did Hamilton.
It's
good stuff.
It's very good. So I'm kind of getting into that. Surely the first singles I ever bought together, I got them from, it was the same time, my daughter's just lost her first tooth, and I think it's about the same time that I remember losing teeth at around the same time. That's in my mind somehow. I bought Fox on the Run by The Sweet and Wombling Merry Christmas. That's got to have been a good year for music. Surely that year, whatever year, that's 76 or 75 or something.
Yeah.
The I'm Sweet sure and the Wombles.
Can't beat that. I think you've got to adjust for inflation with these things because, like, you know, not as many albums would have come out that year. So you wouldn't really be able to buy between 650 and 700 albums that you like from that year. It's probably impossible.
Yeah.
But some big hits. And it does not surprise me that you like Wombling Merry Christmas, of course.
Well, you know, but they might not, because they were in a jumble sale, so they might have been out the year before. But whatever, it was a big moment for me. And then I listened to those two records and thought, that's it. I don't need to buy any more records now. I've heard the best two. Flip side of Wombly Merry Christmas, Madame Chalet. Do you remember the Madame Chalet song? You're too young.
Madame Chalet,
as sweet as cafe au lait.
I can remember it all. Lyric.
Yeah.
Quite a good lyric. So you're like one of those people, you're so punk that you will like stuff that will annoy people who like punk music. So you will go, I'm going to go all in on Wombling Merry Christmas and Madame Chalet.
Yeah.
And just really, this will annoy everybody. And even punks don't dare do that.
It was good stuff. It was good stuff, yeah. Madame Chalet, there was more. They did a lot. They probably did 600 Womble albums that year, to be honest. So you might have been able to do it still.
Mike Batt cleaning up. I like the Mumbles.
I haven't listened to the audio. Usually I get the audio book, but I got sent the actual physical book of your book. So I was flicking through the actual book. But I presume you did your own audio book and read it yourself.
I did, but like with this one, like with the first book I did, it was all just stories about growing up and like misfortunes. And I think it's better as an audio book.
Right.
It's nice to listen to. With this one, I think it's better as a book because it's, you know, loads of albums and detailing all these records. And people tweet me just being like, I've listened to the audiobook. I think it's so good. Is there like a physical list of the books? Because I'd like to go through them. It's like, yeah. If there's a physical list of all the albums, it's in the book that I wrote. And so like, that's where... So it's the kind of book where you want to kind of, you know, stop and find the album, listen to it.
Yeah, and, you know, sure. You know, I can see that. I do have an emerged question about audiobooks, which is if you could have any audio... If you know, like audiobooks are quite a new thing. So there's a lot of authors in the past who never got to record their own audiobooks. Which author would you like to hear read their own audiobook who is no longer able to do so?
Brilliant. Well, I'll not say the Bible because, like, because I think that would be, no matter what anyone's answer is, if you then offered them the Bible as an audiobook by the people who wrote it, they'd go, actually, yes, I would like to hear that instead.
Well, so, because, you know, arguably God wrote it.
Arguably. Yes. So, yeah, you could.
I mean, it'd be nice. Bad if he has to retake. He should know off by heart if he's reading it. God in the booth trying to It's an irritating thing having to read your own book. I mean, yeah. he'd see all the mistakes he'd made. That's what I worry about. I'm writing a book and I think I'm going to read this and go, why did I do that? Why did I do this? The God is going to go, why did I contradict myself so much in this
yeah.
book?
Oh, no, that sounds homophobic. can we go again? I've worded this wrong and it sounds bad. I don't want people to get the wrong idea. Yeah, that's my main tip for anyone writing a book is every time you do a proofread, read it out loud.
Yeah.
Because every time when I did my first audiobook, as I was doing it out loud, I went, oh, I've written a bad book. and you go, I don't like this anymore.
So, well, they should definitely do the audiobook before they print it. They should give you the proof copy and then you go, can I change it? But it would take you another month to go back and change everything, I guess.
I went to the printers for this latest book to go have that experience. And like they take you around the big guided tour of the printing factory. It's really amazing, actually. And you feel really proud. Like, oh, yeah, actually, I've written a book. You know, this is cool. And then like they start, you know, you get to see it at every stage and putting it together. And it's like really, it's like a proper, like, you know, Back to the Future Wallace and Gromit machine. It's like, you know, the way it all works. And then the first one comes hot off and they hand it to you and they go, there you go, there's your book. And I opened it and went, that's wrong.
That's what always happens.
I said that's the last bit that I sent a correction on and they've not made it, so that doesn't make sense. How many of these are you printing off? And they literally went, oh, I don't know, a few hundred of them now. I was like, well, it's all wrong. So they had to phone the publishers and went, yeah, we're going to pulp these.
Oh, wow.
And we're going to do some more. And I nearly was like, went full Alan Partridge and went to the pulping plant to watch that, but I can't. I wish I had now.
Did you keep the copy that was the wrong copy? Because that's you got to think about, that's going to be worth a lot of money.
I didn't.
One wrong copy.
And everyone said that to me afterwards, said you should have kept that. But what I didn't want to do, because I remember at the time, they were like, they said, if this is our mistake at the printing factory, we will pulp them and do it again. If it's not, we're putting them out anyway.
Right.
And I remember being like, if I take this book home with me, they'll think, oh, he's fine with it. So I kind of made the point of leaving it there. So they were like, he does not like the book. Because I didn't want to take it home and go, well, James seems to love it. He took it home. He reckons it'll be worth a lot one day. So yeah, I kind of didn't do it, but I regret in a way. Yeah. I reckon if they messed the cover up or something, if it was like a stupid, then I would have kept it.
Yeah.
You can just look at that and go, that's it. But instead I'd have to open it and go, look, see, it says they're from Uganda, but they're not that band. They're not from Uganda. Like,
they used to put little erratums in books. That's when, you know, if there was a mistake, you'd just get a piece of paper in the book saying, on page 457, this should say instead of this. But that's what they would have had to do, I guess, otherwise.
I had visions of that in my head going, no, this is going to be awful. Because it's already a very niche book that I was aware was going to be like, this is all about how these albums from 2016 that are really obscure. It's like, I can't make a single mistake here because there's already going to be enough people who, like, I'm going to read it and go, this isn't funny. I don't care about these bands. So I was like, oh, if there's one mistake, I'm dead. So
yeah.
It was a magical day that quickly went. Also, at the start of it, they went, oh, loads of what? Michael Palin, he comes here. Every single one of his books he comes to watch should be printed. And then at the end, it's like, well, I understand why now. That's why. Because otherwise this would have just been released if I wasn't here. Yeah. Palin comes and goes, yeah, okay, there you go. And goes home.
Oh, man, once you've written a book, I'm writing a short book and it's so hard work. Mm-hmm. I'm just, once it's over, I just want to, you know, I never want to look at it again, I have to say.
Yeah, I look at it as many times as I need to until I know it's done. Yeah. I've done it. And then it would be mad if I ever sat down to read it.
Yeah. Although, you know, this book, I read this book a lot. We might look at that one later.
Yeah. Don't blame you.
Let's talk about, you know, I don't know if I've really talked to you about your quiz show appearances. You've been on quite a lot of quiz shows. I'm very obsessed with quiz shows. You've been on Blockbuster. You've been Blockbusters and things like that, getting TV quiz shows. Blockbusters, House of Games. I mean, Taskmaster, I think still counts. Have you done, you've done Pointless, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. How did you get?
Three out of those four, I absolutely loved.
Yeah.
Yeah, Pointless, me and Joel Dommett went out in the second round.
Okay.
But I loved it so much. It was such a great day. Because it was like, for one, it was like, you know, comedian special. So it was Alex Horn, Izzy Sooty, Marlon Davis, Ava Vidal, Tom Allen, and Ellie Taylor. And So it's everyone. I like everyone who's on it.
Sure.
I already know Richard Osman and like him. Haven't met Armstrong before, but then that's fun because you like, you know who he is. So you get to show off to him and maybe wind him up. And also you kind of go in there and the studio's like, because it's daytime TV, no one's there. Like the audience are like seven old people who are sat there. Who are just like that. And so you're like, oh, this is like so low pressure. And also when you're behind those podiums, it's not the same as like in front, it looks amazing. And then you go behind and go, that's an iPad that they've blue tacked to a stand. So you don't feel like you're on pointless. You feel like you and your mate Joel are having a laugh. And then first round, we were in the lead by the end of the first round.
Great.
And we had nailed it. Me and Joel on our questions had got the lowest scores that were available on the board.
Yeah.
Very pleased with that. It was, is it synonyms when it's like other, you know,
other meanings of the same word?
Yeah. So like they've done it for TV shows.
Yeah.
And one of them was, it just said Jackson 5. And I got that it was Band of Brothers. And I was so pleased with myself.
That is good.
Like, and at that point I was like, we are going to win this. And we're going to be the best people who've ever been on point.
Yes.
I can't wait. The next round was, recipes, and it was like recipes by famous chefs, and you just had to name any ingredient which might be in any of those recipes. You didn't even have to be specific about which recipe.
Yeah.
And it was all pasta recipes, and I think Joel went for capers, and I like almost applauded him. I was like, that's what you legend, that's definitely going to be in one of them, and it'll be like a really low answer.
Yeah.
It wasn't even on there.
Wow.
So we got 100, and then it was really on, the pressure was on for me.
Sure.
And in a moment of madness and maybe arguably genius, I remembered that sometimes people put dark chocolate into spaghetti bolognese to plump up the beef. And at that point, if we didn't get a really low one, we weren't going through. So I had to take the risk. And also I had to remind myself that when I'm watching these shows at home, all I want them to do is take the risk.
Yeah.
Like I don't want them to play it safe. Although, to be fair, I was playing for a charity and that charity then got fuck all. So, like, that was really bad. But I said chocolate, wasn't on the board. I was pacing around anxiously and broke the... I leant on the iPad and it came off of the stand as I was doing it. So it was a nice... Also, at one point, everybody sat down, happened on Pointless
before. I've seen
before.
That clip.
And that was a special moment that I enjoyed a lot.
Yeah.
So, yeah, those shows are great.
You can go back, and I've been on it four times on Pointless.
Have you? Well, yeah, I hope you go back. Get on it again.
Go back.
It was the best episode ever.
Yeah.
They said.
And which one didn't you like then? It must be Blockbusters you didn't like.
Absolutely loved Blockbusters.
You loved Blockbusters. So you didn't like House of Games. You didn't like Taskmaster.
Loved Taskmaster.
So you didn't like House of Games?
No.
Why didn't you like House of Games?
I've already spoke about this, so it's fine. Oh, so first of all, though, everybody who works on House of Games is lovely. It's
That's
amazing. The team is brilliant. Richard's brilliant. My problem was, so I was a bit like you. So I was just winning every game.
Yeah.
So I won the first three of them.
Yeah.
And not by a little. But the thing is that it doesn't mean, because House of Games is a stupid, you know, it's silly games.
Yeah, yeah.
That are kind of geared towards comedians' minds. Because they're silly, daft puzzles. They're not even like proper difficult puzzles. It's like puzzles with a sense of humor to them. So if you're a comic, you're kind of going to be thinking in that way when you're writing jokes.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't mean that you're cleverer than everyone on the panel. It means that, oh, you've played into my hands and I can do this.
Yeah.
But then everyone else, when they're not doing well at a game, rarely sees it like that. And I was on with Anne Diamond.
Oh, yeah.
A guy from Top Gear called Rory. Apologies for not remembering your full name, mate. I should remember it. Rory Reed, I think. And also Samantha Womack, who used to be Samantha Janus.
Oh yes. Yeah.
And we all got them in the morning. Everyone's getting on. Because you film all five episodes in a day. And go in, do the first one, and we come off of it, and a few of them are like, it seemed fair, those questions are a bit silly. it's a silly show. And they go in the second one, and I won again, and they were a bit looking at me. They're like, oh, you won again, did you? I was like, oh, yeah, good fun. Good fun, innit? And then the third one, I win again. And then I never thought this would happen to me in my life, but we came off, and I was just standing in the green room between shows, and Anne Diamond just comes straight up to me. And she goes, you know, this doesn't mean anything. You know, this doesn't mean you're clever. You know, it's just a stupid game for stupid people with stupid brains. And I was like, and then Womack kind of came up behind her and was like, yeah, this doesn't mean people are smart. It's just silly puzzles. Doesn't mean anything. And I was like, yeah, I know. It's just a laugh, isn't it? It's like, it's just silly. And like, you know, in that last one, I think I want a bread bin. Like, it's silly. And they really hated it. And like, you know, we had to go back to the fourth one and they were like, fuck this. We're going back and doing this again. And so like, and then I think I was walking in and someone, but no one else knew that this was going on. So the team and everybody makes a show are trying to have fun with the kind of like, because I think normally they have to work hard to get everyone to pretend like they care about it.
Yeah.
So normally they have to be like, okay, remember everyone, we're trying to beat James, he's won 3 in a row, so let's really be mean to him and stuff like that. And I'm there going, no, you don't understand, they are actually being mean to me. Like, I don't need any more of this. And then I stopped. I got a lot of people, I was still on Twitter at the time when it went out, and I got a lot of people tweeting me about it, being like, why in episode 4 do you stop trying to play the game? Why did you stop answering questions and you just sit there? And in episode 5, again, the same thing, you didn't participate in anyway. And one thing that was funny is that, like, we went and did episode 4, I didn't, you know, I just sat there sulking, which is poor form, you know, I should just get on with it and play it anyway. But like, I was just like, oh, I can't be bothered. Everyone's being a dick. So I just didn't play anymore. And Diamond won. And that episode finished. And then we're walking out and she just went, it's such a great show. It's just so much fun. It's just so lighthearted and fun. And I really can't wait for the next episode. She won that episode. But then I won at the end still.
Yeah.
And it's me with the trophy kind of like that at the camera, just really not happy at all that I'm just doing this. But then I was meant to meet up with, because it finishes quite early, and I'd arranged to go down to the South Bank because the Udderbilly Festival was on and meet Nish Kumar and Ed Gamble and hang out with them. But we finished a bit earlier and Ed and Nish wouldn't be free for another 2 hours. So I stayed and hung out with the crew.
Yeah.
And just got smashed because no one was really drinking all day. They've got a normal green room because it's daytime, no one's touching any of the booze.
Yeah.
So after the show, I'm like, just drink all this. So I was slagging off, you know, going, they were dicks to me and all this. And everyone's like, well, you hit it. Well, I was like, no, I didn't. And just getting hammered. And then I went to meet Ed and Nish, and it was like a walk. It wasn't that far a walk. So like, I just thought I'd just walk it. And I'm just out my head.
Yeah.
And I've got the House of Games trophy. And I'm just walking down the street. I'm smacking it against lampposts, and I'm running it against fence, like metal fence rails, and just like not showing it any respect at all, denting it.
Yeah.
I just walk over. And then I go under one of those big bridges at Waterloo, and Milton Jones's son is walking towards me, and I know him quite well through supporting Milton on tour. I used to see him like once a week. And I was like, hey man, how's it going? And I'm like, also. Milton Jones' son, so all of Milton Jones' family are just lovely people who every time, do you have people in your life who every time you meet them, you come across as an absolute lunatic? And you're like, and you want to go, that's not who I am. but they would never believe you because every time they've seen you, you've been acting weird.
Yeah.
And like, so every time he'd met me before was like when I went to Milton's house pre-tour show and I was a newcomer. So I was nervous as hell. I had a gig that night in a 1,000-seater. So I was always acting like a weirdo. And then he'd see me after some show. They'd come to see shows. He'd see me afterwards. I'd always say something. I think one of his friends once after a gig tried to do a playful joke to me going like, oh, Milton was great. You not so much. And I was like, fuck you. And then instantly like, why did I say that? Why did I just say fuck you? He's just trying to be funny. And so like, I've always come across as bad in front of the family in my head. So I bump into his son, I'm hammered, I've got a dentist trophy. I'm like, hey man, I just did a show and I'll tell you what, and Diamond's a wanker. And he's like, okay. And he's kind of trying to look for other things to talk to me about. And then two people came up to me, members of the public walking past, and they saw I had the trophy, and they went, And I didn't know who I was or anything, but they just went, hey, 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 mate. Oh, did you win that playing bingo or something? And I went, yeah, I did. Watch this shit. And then I threw it in the air and then it smashed on the floor into about like 8 different pieces. And then obviously Milton's son's just looking at me like, this guy has got some serious issues. Every time I see him, he just seems to be unhinged. And so I had to like, the bowl part of the trophy is intact on its own. So I had to kind of put the ears in separately and the base and all the different bits into the bowl.
Yeah.
So I kind of put all the broken bits into that and I walk in and meet Ed and Nish. And I see them and they're delighted that I've smashed the trophy already and that it's decimated. And then on the way home, I gave it to a busker. And I just put it in his basket and carried on walking and left him with this Haynes trophy. So, yeah, I mean, all my other friends who have won it all have trophies, pride of place in their house.
Yeah.
And mine's just been sold for scrap somewhere.
I've got two. I've got the champion of champions. Were you not invited back for champion of champions?
No, I think they were like, it's too risky to get him back on again. He vocally told us how much he didn't enjoy it after the first one.
I got drunk up with the same thing. I mean, Rachel Riley won the first one and then I kind of got the gist of it and kind of won, I think, most, maybe I won all the rest of them. And yeah, her moods changed noticeably through the day. And they all left and I sat there drinking with Osman and his then girlfriend and the crew. But yeah, and I got quite drunk as well. It was quite good. Then the second series was in Glasgow, so you got to go to Glasgow. Flew up there.
I would love to do it again with people because, like, I enjoyed the games loads.
Yeah, I mean,
I thought, oh my man, if I was on with people who liked me, this would be so great. It's one of the most fun shows I've ever done.
Oh, well, that's fantastic. I enjoyed that very much. Let me ask you. Oh, I don't think I've asked you this emergency question, which is, and correct me if I'm wrong. If all the museums and art galleries in the world got together and said, we're going to give James Acaster one thing, you can take one item, painting, sculpture, artifact, and it's his, which one thing would you like to own from all the museums and art galleries in the world?
That is a very good question.
Thank you.
Well,
I think so. I'm just going to have a bit more Bella's pudding while you think about it.
Of course you are.
Because I'm just coming down off the first hit.
Yeah.
And this is it. This is absolutely it, 100%. Oh.
This is my genuine answer.
Okay.
And it's going to sound... And it's a stupid answer in a way, but I there's nothing else I'd want. So there's... I've spoke about this before on different things, but there's the Manor House Museum in Kettering. It's a very tiny little museum.
Yeah.
And it's just obviously about local stuff. And since I was a little kid, I've been going there, school visits and various things. Once Billy Boyd from the Lord of the Rings films went there to sign autographs for no reason. The films were coming out at the time, but it was very odd to get one of the Hobbits to come to the Manor House Museum and sign autographs. You're like, two James, Hobbits rock, Billy Boyd. Loved it.
He's right.
There's a thing there. One of the exhibits there is a mummified cat, which was found in a wall in Kettering. And it's gross. It looks horrible.
Yeah.
Like, it's just completely... You can Google it and see it, but it's this horrible husk of a cat. And everyone who goes to the museum, it's freaks out when they see it. So it's become a really big part of my life. And my upbringing was this mummified cat that everyone was freaking out over. And I think I would love to have that in my... If I didn't have anything displayed in my flat, I think that I've got more of a connection with that than I have with the Mona Lisa.
But if you took the Mona Lisa, you could probably afford to buy the mummified cat and have a few billion pounds left over. So
good point.
You could go to the Kettering Museum and go, how much for the cat?
Better.
I don't think they would sell it. I mean, that's the thing. Some things are priceless in a different way, aren't they? If it's the heart of the museum.
I think they would sell it because there was one of their other things that was quite a big deal was this model of a Celtic man holding up a sword like that, and he had these tattoos. And it was like, that was also like really, everyone in Kettering knew that guy.
Yeah.
And they sold that to a cafe in Milton Keynes or somewhere. And it's just inexplicably in the corner of the world.
So more museums should sell stuff. That's what I think. I think if they went at the end, I think if museums did a sort of supermarket sweep every now and again, just said, you're one person's going to win today and you're allowed to take one thing home, I think that would get more people into museums. But yes. B, they should just go, how much will you give us for this? Because they've got most of them have got way too much stuff.
Oh, they have. I mean, obviously, you know, in reality, if I had to do it for real, you'd get something from the British Museum and give it back to the country they stole it from.
That's a good idea.
That's what you'd actually do. Because the British Museum have got way too much stuff, none of which is theirs. And it would be good to just like, yeah, give it back and then go, there you go, it's fine.
I mean, I think it would be more insulting if the British Museum gave the Elgin marbles to you. said, you can have them. We're not going to give them back. Oh, well, I'm going to give them back. Yeah. Well, no, I don't care. We're not giving them back. But we'll give them to you, James Acaster.
Give them to James Acaster.
You've been a good bloke.
He did a routine on them once. I did a routine on them, and I was astounded at, like, because you know when you kind of do, like, there's some things in stand-up where you think, well, no one will disagree with me on this. And then, absolutely astonishing when some people go, no, we should keep them. Like, really? Where the hell have you got that from? No, we should keep them. They're ours now. We've had them longer. Oh, okay. Astonishing.
Well, there we go. And I'll ask you this emergency question I've been asking recently a lot. Who is the most famous person you've ever been in a lift with that you didn't get into the lift with, though? You can't have got in with them as your friend. You had to get in and then they were there, or they got in after you. Could have got on the same floor, but you weren't with them when they got on. Do you understand the question? Because Ashley and B didn't understand the question.
I fully understand the question. Christopher Biggins.
Is it?
Yep.
Anything?
Christopher Biggins. It was at a hotel. again on the Milton Jones tour. So, you know, a bigger deal for me when I saw celebs then. Nowadays, don't give a shit. Back then, I remember the doors opening and Biggins standing there early morning. He got up just in... We both got up just in time for breakfast. We both done the thing where you leave it as late as you can and then go down to get the breakfast. Doors opened and he was staring... He clearly thought, and he also did that thing we've all fallen for, where you've pressed ground floor. On the way down, someone else has pressed it, but you haven't. You think it's the ground floor.
Yeah.
So you step off like it, confidently, like it's the ground floor. And then you realise, oh no, this is floor three. It's another load of bedrooms, and I now need to get back on the lift. And so I got to see Biggins do a little panic, walk off all days with a little tufty in his hair to just look up, realise this is not the breakfast buff, and then get back on the lift with me. I said hello to him, and he said hello back, but in a very good way that let me know I'm not in the mood. So I was like, yep, fair enough.
Yeah. I would have thought Christopher Biggins would front it out and pretend that was his floor and just wait for the next lift. That's the kind of guy I would think. That's good detail to know that he would admit his error in front of you and step back.
I think if it was another time of day and he wasn't going down to get breakfast at the last minute, he would risk it. But I think that the seconds, like, time was of the essence. And if he had just got off that lift and started out, he could have been looking at being refused service.
Because sometimes those lifts in the morning, when they're busy, it can often take 4 or 5 minutes. It's quicker to go down the stairs.
Yeah, yeah. I always, actually, I rarely take the lifts now on tour because I am getting so little exercise on tour that I just, any chance I get, I'm exercising. So always the lift. And Joel Dommett told me that Bruce Lee never took lifts and he always took the stairs. So every time I'm taking the stairs, I always think to myself, Bruce Lee always took the stairs. like I'm Bruce Lee now.
Worked out. Well, it didn't work out for him in the end, but it worked out for him in the short term. It wasn't wasn't because of lifts, was it? That anything went
wrong? No. Worked out for Joel. He looks good.
He does look good. Yeah. Well, were you going to go to the Melbourne Festival this year? Was that on the cards or was that...
I wasn't. I went last year and this year was going to be a complete break from any stand-up at all. Like, I'd deliberately taken a year off.
Yeah.
So...
Good year. Good choice.
Good choice. I mean, I feel awful about, like, my lockdown has been easy.
Yeah.
And so mainly what I've been doing is just feeling like an absolute piece of shit. I was feeling really guilty because of that.
Well, look, we've nearly used up all the time we've got with you. Is there anything coming up that you know? I mean, because obviously everything is stalled somewhat as a result of the world stopping. Is there anything coming up that we should get? You've been doing another podcast, I know about.
Well, that's the thing. Book. It's the best time ever to be a podcaster.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, I Perfect Sounds, it's called. James Acaster's Perfect Sounds. It's on BBC Sounds and various other platforms, Apple, Spotify, stuff like that. And the 20-minute episodes.
Right.
We're doing a lot of them. And every week I've sent a different masterpiece from 2016 to a guest, and they come on, they tell me what I thought of it. It's kind of like an album club. I tell them why I think it's incredible, and by the end of the episode, I see if they will admit that 2016 is the greatest year for music of all time.
Good.
I've absolutely loved it. Like, every week, it's the highlight of my working week, at least, is, like, getting to do the episodes of, you know, chatting to comedians about albums that I... And I've deliberately, like, you know, like I say, I didn't buy any albums that I didn't like.
Yeah.
I'm not doing episodes on any albums that I don't love.
Sure.
Like, I love all of them. And it's been a real lesson. I've come a long way since that kid who flipped out when he got told popping a note sounded like a joke. I'm very good at handling now if people don't like the same music as me. Be like, yeah, you know what? That's we're different people. It's subjective. But yeah, it's been so great, especially the obscure albums, to kind of draw some attention to those and shine a light on them.
Cool. And off menus continuing onwards, I presume.
Yeah, we just finished the third series, and we're going to do a fourth one.
Great.
We've got loads in the can already from America, and we're going to start recording some more soon. So, yeah, again.
Well, good luck finding a better guest than me. That's what I have to say to you.
Yeah, I mean, we'll do well to find one who, I mean, you are definitely some people's favourite guest we've ever had, and other people think it doesn't really count as an episode.
Well, I'm counting this as an episode. Thank you very much, James
Thank
A. Ketter.
You.
Thank you to O2, Priority O2, for looking after us. Priority on O2. And hope you've enjoyed this, O2 customers, and then the rest of the world eventually.
But, still getting paid the same amount for this, by the way?
You?
Yeah,
or
keep
me.
Us in the episode. Both of us.
We're still getting exactly the same as usual.
As we were going to get.
Yeah. It's all right, Nick. We didn't have to leave the house.
I need to re-invoice for it.
I think you've been paid already. I think they said they paid you already.
No, they haven't. They haven't, because there was a typo on the invoice.
Oh, is that okay? Yeah, no, you're getting the same money as far as I know. That's pretty good, isn't it?
Because I tell you what. I tell you what. This was in the diary. Going to do it. Then the whole Comedians Fund thing happened.
Yeah.
And comedians went, and then, what should pop up in my inbox? A little email from Richard Herring. Telling everybody, hey everyone, I think it would be really good of us comics who are lucky enough to still to have an income and to save up from all our fortunate work over the years. It'd be good of us to give our money to this Comedians Fund. I personally, Richard Herring, am giving 10 or 20% of... I've got two things coming up soon, which I'm assuming...
This, yeah. I was very upset when this got cancelled.
I've got two quite fortunately well-paid things coming up. I'm going to give 20% of my earnings from these to the comedians, but I would recommend everyone does the same if you've got anything coming up. And I read it, I was like, oh, fuck's sake, Herring sent me this, and he knows that I've got... He knows exactly how much I'm about to get paid for something. So now... I've got to do this now. I've got to go in. And I was like, well, I'll definitely donate to it. I'll give it to them. And then this Chortle article came out. And it was like, people have donated to it. Richard Herring donated £10,000. And I was like, he fucking didn't go anonymous. What is this? He always has to have credit for it. He always has to make it about himself bad enough. He's hijacked International Women's Day. And now he's doing this. I was like, oh, God. So I went on. I didn't donate as much as you, but I assume I wasn't getting paid the same amount as you for those gigs, to be fair. you're putting in a lot more work. But I begrudgingly gave more than I wanted to. And then when it looked like this wasn't going to happen, I was like, what the fuck? I just gave a percentage of what I was going to get from the O2 gig, and now that's not even happening anymore. And then when it was like over Zoom, I was like, there's no way they're going to pay us the same amount over Zoom.
They're going to pay us the same. So it's all right. And it's the same for me. And I only did it non-anonymously because I knew that would make everyone else have to do it. That's why I did it. And it worked.
Well,
if I'd been anonymous, no one would have done it. And I knew I could shame you all into giving money. It raised 100 grand, that charity, so that was very good and helped.
Yes, absolutely.
Helped a lot of comedians through 3 or 4 months.
100 grand, a big percentage of that was you. Like, 10 grand was Richard Herring. I've never admired someone and been so disgusted by them at the same time so much.
Well, thank you very much for doing it. I'm glad we're getting paid. That's taken a lot of weight off my worries as well. And I'll see you again very soon. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. James A. Kastner!
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Goodbye. Bye. You have been listening to Rahalastapa with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, James Acaster. Thank you very much to Ian Oxygen and everyone at O2 for providing us with the funding to do this show. Thank you very much also to Chris Evans, not that one, who has done a lot of work behind the scenes, as always. Also, thank you, I'm indebted to my producer, Ben Walker, who did a lot of the work on the original version that we were going to do at the O2. Imagine if we'd been at the O2, how excited that would have been. It was still good, though, wasn't it? I am indebted to Kathleen McKeegan, who runs the fantastic Rahalastapa, rahalastapa.co.uk, which is a wonderful research tool for me. I am also indebted to our executive producer, Richie James. We called him Jamie Rich in that backstage, me and James Acaster. That was the nickname we came up from. He had a lot of helpful notes, though, on the show. This is a gofasterstripe.com, Sky Potato, rahalastapa.co.uk, and Fuzz Production. Why not head to gofasterstripe.com/badges and become a monthly badger? There's lots of extras, as well as all those lovely things you get, like membership cards and stuff. And one of the bonus videos in this week's up there now is me making Bella's pudding, showing you how to make Bella's pudding from start to finish. You can, what is a like a cooking video. I would hope you're all going to make it yourself, but you need to be a monthly badger to see that, my fan friend. So why not become one? There's all lots of backstage interviews. There's an extra bit with James Acaster as well that we did the week before to test everything was working. So go and check that out, my fan friends. We put up the director's commentary of me talking to Brian Wesson this week as well. So there's lots of stuff up there, hundreds and hundreds of videos. It's worth your £3 a month. Plus you get into the monthly draw, you get all sorts of bonus extras because we love you and it helps us keep these podcasts rolling out to you, my fan friends. You're my fan friends. Thank you for listening, my fan friends.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
On Formative, middle school kids from New York City public schools interview a phenomenal collection of grown-ups.
Me? Like, I don't know what I want to do.
You don't have to have all the answers.
I feel like a lot of people's favorite topics are, like, interest in their life.
That is a really good answer.
The podcast where the leaders of today are interviewed by leaders of tomorrow. Listen now at newyorkedge.org/formative or wherever you get your podcasts.
Thanks for listening. Go to gofasterstripe.com for all your Rich Herring download and book needs. Go to richherring.com/gigs to find out if Can I Have My Ball Back is coming near to you. And please listen to as many podcasts on this feed as you possibly can and make your family and friends and children and strangers, make them listen too. Do get consent from everyone before you make them listen, though. All right, thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Bye-bye.